I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is the evening of Sunday, August 11th, 2024. Just got finished watching the closing ceremonies of the 2024 Paris Olympics. A lot of more weird abstract art stuff going on. Pretty nice concert. Athletes appear to be looking happy. In any case, this is a solo pod for today, folks. We had some uncertainty about the schedule for the quarterfinals of League's Cup, and we were initially under the impression that if the Rapids had beaten FC Juarez, which they did, that their next game was going to be on Monday, and then it turns out their game was on Tuesday. Mark and I have very busy schedules on the weekend and often conflicting schedules, so it's hard for us to do a weekend pod after the team wins a Friday game and advances in a knockout competition. So our initial thoughts, we were under the impression that the quarterfinals was going to start on Monday, was just not pod in between those, given the timing, and then just come back after the team had made it through to the past the quarterfinals or been eliminated. But, you know, podcasting on Monday, me getting it out first thing in the morning on Tuesday, and then you guys having 12 hours, certainly less than 24 hours, didn't really seem to make sense. And to do that on top of the fact that that would be the end of the secondary transfer window, which closes on the 14th of August, which is the Wednesday, seemed, once we knew that the game was on Tuesday, to make more sense to just have the game on Tuesday, podcast on Wednesday once the transfer window is closed. We have full clarity on what that looks like, if there's any deadline day moves made by Porik Smith and the Rapids front office, and then we can go about whatever happens after Wednesday, League's Cup semifinal or what have you. Excuse me, League's Cup quarterfinal. Retract my previous. So the Rapids won in the round of 32 on Friday. They were playing in the round of 16 on Tuesday. We thought, we were under the impression that the round of 16, the Rapids would have played on the Monday, and then if they made it through, would be making it through to the quarterfinals. Apologies for any confusion there. It's a very confusing tournament, folks. To the people who organize and make decisions about League's Cup, I know, I'm sure you are listening to this podcast, would love to know ahead of time what that schedule is going to look like and what teams are playing on what days or what matchups are taking place on what days, rather than to find out after the fact that it turns out one team's playing on the Monday and then a bunch of teams, including the Rapids, are playing on the Tuesday. It makes it harder for fans on only a few days' notice to make that work with their schedules for coming out to games, and it makes it harder for people with day jobs who do media to do the media portion of that. In any case, I'll start with the Olympics. So congratulations to the United States women's national team. Congratulations to the Colorado trio and to Emma Hayes for taking home the gold medal at these summer games. On Saturday morning, Mountain Time, they defeated Brazil by a score of 1-0, a 57th minute goal from Mallory Swanson ended up winning the game in this one. And I thought it was a good measured performance from the United States, but also a typical final that we've seen, Olympics or otherwise, where it's kind of cragey. There are long stretches where there's not a whole lot going on, or rather where teams are electing to try and prevent the other team from scoring rather than trying to go and create and score a goal. I thought Brazil was a worthy opponent. You know, obviously from a narrative standpoint, disappointed to see that Marta was, you know, not able to win a championship in probably her final game for Brazil. And disappointed, at least for me personally, that she was a 61st minute sub after it was 1-0 rather than not getting to start this game. But in any case, I thought ultimately it was a final of moments, as most finals are. And the United States women's national team showed emphatically in this competition that when the moments were at their biggest, when they needed to be at their best, they were at their best. They were at their best in the moments they needed to against Japan and against Germany, especially in extra time in 1-0 victories. And they were like that again in this Brazil game as well, where I think you could argue Brazil had more of the chances or had a higher XG. A lot of that came after the United States had taken the lead. So on some level, that's a game state of, you know, KG back and forth game. It's 0-0. One team gets a really big chance. They finish that really big chance, and then they go into prevent defense mode, and the opponent just comes at them, and it's just a matter of whether or not they're going to be able to tie the game. Absolutely fantastic sequence from the Colorado girls to get what was ultimately the gold medal winning goal. The captain, the great Lindsey Horan, gets the sequence started with a fantastic pass from midfield that splits the defense. I think she was trying to find Sophia Smith on the play. Sophia Smith possibly could have been called for offsides on that, but she made the run in a way that then left the ball open for Mallory Swanson to run onto the ball, also without Sophia Smith herself being ruled to have impeded or affected the play to where she would have been called offsides potentially. And then Swanson goes in, goes against the keeper 1v1 and is able to finish. So all three of the Colorado girls, albeit with one of them not touching the ball, directly involved on the goal that was scored. But I don't think there's any question for me. The player of the game, the player of the women of the game, it's not man of the match. Player of the match, woman of the match. Woman of the match sounds better. The woman of the match was the goalkeeper, Alyssa Nair, who made several fantastic saves and has proven that she can come up big in big finals. She had that PK stop. I can't remember whether it was against the Netherlands or against England in the World Cup win in 2019. but she was absolutely fantastic. And so I thought the U.S. are deserving champions, and they took down three really good teams in the knockout stages between a tough Japan team, a rematch with Germany after a win in the group stage, and then Brazil and the great that is Marta for Brazil and for Orlando Pride to ultimately win home the gold. And so I think credit to Emma Hayes and everything that she had done. It was what, right around 2 months ago now, that she would have had her first game, her first international window in charge of the U.S. women's national team, her first game at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, which I covered. And they did a lot from a chemistry building standpoint. They did a lot in terms of embedding in some of the younger players, like a Naomi Girma, more so a Trinity Rodman, absolutely. And she did a really good job, I think, tactically managing this. The U.S. were one of the top most talented teams at these Olympics. And I don't think there's any question Emma Hayes was one of, if not the best women's coach at the Olympics. And so credit to Emma Hayes, credit to the big stars, particularly for Colorado, that were able to get it done. And this is absolutely a team win. And given where this program was this time last year with crashing out in the Women's World Cup in Australia, I think it's a fantastic page turn with what they're doing, and the fact that it's happening with, I think, a new head coach who's here and who wants to build something, isn't going to go back to the club game in England anytime soon, certainly going to be here for the World Cup, and to have it happen with the three Colorado girls being such instrumental players on this is exactly what you wanted. So I could not have asked, you couldn't have asked for a better result. And I think given the circumstances around the timing with the coaching hire coming in and the turnover of the roster, even going back to last year under Vlatko and Andonovski, I don't think you could have asked for a better performance. And rightfully so, United States women's soccer is back on top of the game, as it has been and as it should be. And right now, I'm just looking forward to, with the age of the three Colorado girls and this younger core that Emma Hayes has brought in and the project that they have going forward, is this a team that can win the World Cup again in 3 years' time? I don't think there's any question that they can be a contender, but I think that is now the challenge before them, and that's, a chance for more history to be written for this program, and from a Colorado standpoint, by Mallory Swanson, Sophia Smith, and Lindsey Horan. LFG, baby. Let's move on to the Friday game, full-time from Dick's Sporting Goods Park, Colorado Rapids 3, FC Juarez 2 in this game. Georgi Mihailovic returns to the starting 11 for the Colorado Rapids with his buzz cut, shaved head, bald head, whatever you want to call it, listeners. And then one kind of unsurprising scratch in there was Lulz Boubacar coming in for Moise Bombito. I have it on very good authority, listeners. He woke up on game day feeling some muscle tightness, and then so it was entirely precautionary why he was left out of the squad, and Lulz Boubacar was brought in to be the starter. This was not a Olympic Leonese situation necessarily, though we will talk about some more news on the Moise Bombito transfer saga front a little bit later. But so Georgi Mihailovic comes in back into the 10 position, and then Cole Bassett drops back into the double pivot and alongside Connor Ronan. And this game was very, very similar to the Club Leon one. I think a little bit more balanced in that, you know, I would say first half was more so the Rapids had a good start and then a good ending to what they did against Club Leon. I think it was more back and forth or more balanced across the various sequences of play or moments of dominance from either team. You know, I think certainly Juarez tried to come out and play with the ball a little bit. I really liked what I saw from Villalpando and Zaldívar from Juarez. I thought they were two very good influential players. The Rapids players were more aggressive in attacking opportunities than they were against Club León, and they tried to test the keeper a little bit earlier on in the game, which I thought was something that was nice to see. You know, Navajo, Jonathan Lewis, and Cole Bassett all had big chances in the opening 30 minutes. I remember really distinctly the open header that Cole Bassett had in the 8th minute. Georgi Mihailovic absolutely bossed this game, particularly from a set-piece standpoint, listeners. And so in the 8th minute, I think that was the first corner of the game for the Rapids. It was one of the first ones. In any case, he finds Bassett just for a run-up header completely unchallenged, and he smashes it over the bar and probably should have finished. And Juarez gets their first big chance of the game, and they're able to ultimately score it. In the 18th minute, Zach Steffen with a nice save on a shot from outside of the box, you know, reactionary, but, you know, a difficult shot. Saving it was an accomplishment, but unfortunate that the rebound ultimately falls straight to Zaldívar, who is able to finish that off. I should say both center backs for the Rapids were able to finish out this game, but I think just a couple minutes before that opening goal for Juarez, Lulz Boubacar took a little bit of a knock on a scramble sequence inside the box, and maybe that affected his reaction time. But in any case, opportunistic fox-in-the-box moment from the Juarez striker, and they're able to take the lead 1-0. Colorado ultimately ties the game up in the 28th minute off of a just after Jonathan Lewis had a great opportunity in the box that he puts wide. That leads to a Juarez goal kick, and then Rafael Navajo is pressing former Minnesota poophouser and crap talker Francisco Calvo, the center back. Navajo is able to press him, win the ball off him, and then pass it straight to Johnny for virtually a tap-in at the far post to make it 1-1. And so that was a really nice sequence, and we continue to see that the Rapids are not Red Bulls Colorado, but when they press all out, and they do it in a way that is very organized, and they do it in a way that's very effective, that ultimately makes the opponent uncomfortable, forces a turnover, and then creates a good opportunity. And when the Rapids are able to finish those, whether it's Jonathan Lewis, Rafael Navajo, Georgi Mihailovic, Cole Bassett, this is a very fun team to watch. This is a very dangerous and organized team to watch as well. The game was ultimately 2-1 to Colorado at halftime. Several big saves from Zach Steffen. I guess I'll take a moment to mention this as well, listeners. So Steffen made 8 saves on the night, according to MLSsoccer.com, which does have, I think, an overinflated value to some of the other models out there. In any case, MLSsoccer.com Leagues Cup had Juarez's expected goals at 3.4, so they should have gotten almost 3.5 goals. So at least 3, possibly 4 goals. They only had 2, and Zach Steffen made 8 saves. I should say that one of those goals did come off of a penalty, and you don't necessarily blame the goalkeeper for not saving the penalty. So let's remove, 0.8 of that. So let's say on 2.6 expected goals from the run of play, so removing the penalty, Steffen only let in 1 goal. And the goal that was let in was not his fault, and just preventing the initial shot on the Zaldívar goal was a fantastic performance. So Steffen with a really, really good performance, several really big saves to ultimately help win this game for the Rapids. And that came off of a Monday performance against Club León in the Balboa Derby, in which he made 6 saves in the 90 minutes and then saved 2 of 5 penalties that he face as well. I don't think there's any question that these are the best two games of Zach Seffin's time as a member of the Burgundy Boys. And I think it was really telling that Lawless Abubakar said that Zach Steffen was the man of the match. Jonathan Lewis said that Lawless Abubakar was the man of the match. So if you asked a bunch of Rapids players who they thought the best player was, they thought somebody else was, and their teammates are making an argument that they were the best player on the night. So I don't think there's any question. Change two big saves from Zach Steffen, and the Rapids are probably out of Leagues Cup by now. He was a big part of the win against Club Leon. He was a big part of why the game against Leon went to penalties, and he was a big part of why the Rapids ultimately won this game against Juarez by just one goal. But in any case, just before halftime, Jonathan Lewis, after scoring the goal, goes 1v1 with the outside back for Juarez, who is Abella, A-B-E-L-L-A, I think it's Abella, and draws a penalty from him. This did require MLS referee Armando Villarreal to go to the monitor to review it. I think it's a handball, clearly, for me, listeners. The defender does go to ground, is stabilizing himself with his arm, but the arm is certainly outstretched, natural position or otherwise. It was, in doing so, he was making himself bigger, and ultimately, the play off of the hand ultimately played to the advantage of Juarez by preventing the cross and then potentially and then forcing a corner rather than a dangerous scoring opportunity off of the cross from Jonathan Lewis. So it's ruled a handball. I thought both of the penalties that were called, albeit with some help from the monitor in this game, were the right call for me. We've seen Mexican players and coaches in this game criticize the officiating and question the officiating and other aspects of the tournament. I thought the coach from Juarez came out and in his opening statement in English, I should point out, did criticize the officials, but then went on to say that they deserve to lose the game regardless of the officiating. You know, when both teams get a penalty and nobody gets a red card and the game's, you know, fairly liberally called from a refereeing standpoint in terms of it, you know, turns into prison rules, I think, in the opening 20-25 minutes. I don't think you can blame the officiating. In any case, Georgi Mihailovic steps up. He takes the penalty. Cole Bassett guarded the PK spot, even though Georgi had the ball before it was taken. And a really nice PK from Georgi to continue a great run of form that he's had, goal scoring and creating chances and converting on penalties, going back to his time before the Olympics, during the Olympics, and then now returning in with the Rapids. Kind of a back and forth second half, certainly. But the Rapids ultimately score the winner in the 59th minute off of a broken play off of a corner. Calvin Harris was really, really good in this game for me, folks. I think we've seen that the Rapids wingers have certainly targeted the opponent's fullbacks when the coaching staff identifies that as a potential differential that they could gain on. And Calvin loves himself catching the ball in a wide position, cutting a little bit inside, dribbling, and then taking on a defender. He had that sequence, I think, in the first half where he cut back and just absolutely broke Francisco Calvo's ankles. So Calvin feeling himself on the techers, and on this particular moment in the 59th minute, Georgi is able to find Cole Bassett for a flick-on header. That goes to Navajo, who touches the ball at kind of an awkward situation, goes off the post, and Calvin's there to just get it over the line, even though there are two defenders in the highlighter, Juarez Green, to try and prevent that. So I thought Calvin earned the goal, and I thought he had a performance that gradually got better as he grew into the game, and I thought he was ultimately rewarded with the goal and ended up being the winner because Juarez pushed for this one, folks. There was some last-ditch defending from the Rapids in this one. Lawless Abubakar had a really big block in the final minutes. Andreas Maxu called into action at times. There were several times where the Rapids fullbacks, who we have been critical of the last couple months for the team, have kind of been in 1v1 defending situations and done a really good job in difficult moments where they probably should have gotten skinned. So, and then Ronan with some couple big blocks. I know Cole Bassett had as well. So the back six plus Zach Steffen made several big plays throughout this game that ultimately kept the scoreline as it was. And certainly, while it was nice to see what the Rapids attack was able to achieve in this game, I don't think there's any question the defense, good offense scores goals, good defense wins games, or wins championships, if you will. And so I thought absolutely the Rapids defense, while conceding two goals, and one from the run of play, were big enough to where they prevented Juarez from, you know, coming through on their 3.4 expected goals. But one disappointing play was Connor Ronan in the 70th minute, goes to ground on Hurtado, who I thought was absolutely fantastic off the bench in this game. It was the 68th minute in which the play happened. VAR then ultimately made the call come the 70th minute. So Ronan goes to ground right at the end line and then takes out the player, I think, without getting the ball. And then ultimately it's called a penalty. And then Hurtado, who draws the penalty off of Connor Ronan, is able to slot it through with Zach Steffen guessing the wrong way on that. There were some big chances going the other way. Rafael Navajo had that potential smashing header that he wasn't able to finish off of. Zach Steffen made a couple big saves. It got really chippy. The Juarez bench was absolutely incensed at some no calls. Rafael Navajo probably should have gotten a yellow card at some point, but Armando Villarreal, for me, made it very clear early on in the game, albeit with contact between Calvin Harris and defenders in the final third, that he was going to let the boys play, and the Rapids played into that, and they were measured in how they went about, I think, with the CONCACAFing, and Juarez players were absolutely incensed. And so it's really, really rewarding. It's really satisfying, I think, for all the times in which the Mexican national team has CONCACAFed the United States, or that a Mexican team has poop-housed the U.S. in any of the competitions they see each other, for an MLS team to give a Mexican team a taste of their own medicine and watch them lose, and then also watch them absolutely lose their minds just with every single no-call, the Juarez bench getting, coming off the bench, almost coming onto the field, exiting the technical area. In one case, I think for me, not persistent infringement, what is it? A mass confrontation of the fourth official. There's an assistant for Juarez who's given a straight red card as well. And so that was absolute chaos in the final 20 minutes for me once it was ultimately 3-2 to the Rapids. But I thought the Rapids managed it decently well. And in the big moments where there was an opportunity for Juarez to make it 3-3, you had Lalas Abubakar, you had Keegan Rosenberry, you had Zach Steffen making the big plays to ultimately preserve the lead. And in that regard, I thought the Rapids, it was another good performance. It was another positive result. It was a game that they deserved to win, and also another game in which I think they've shown their growth and have more opportunities for growth from the mistakes and hopefully what they'll learn from, and how the coaching staff will prepare them further on as they go on in this competition or as they return to league play come the end of the month. So we'll see what happens. Let's move on to the Toluca match. Deportivo Toluca got here in Leagues Cup via winning their group. They defeated Chicago Fire by a score of 3-1, and then they defeated Sporting Kansas City 2-1. And then in their first knockout game in the round of 32, they played at Houston Dynamo, and they won that game 5-4 in penalties. And that was after going 2-2 through 90 minutes. This did require Lopez to score in the 6 minutes of stoppage time in order to even force penalties as well in that game. The only PK miss that we saw was Lawrence Anali for Houston Dynamo, and then so it would have been the Toluca PK takers would have gone 5-for-5, and then Houston would have gone would have gone 4-for-5 in that one. So I think some good wins, albeit over bad MLS teams, if we're talking about Toluca being in a group with Chicago and Sporting Kansas City, and a really close game against a decent Houston team that could have gone either way, either in the 90 minutes or in penalties. When we talk about, I know we've done this for every single Liga MX team that we've previewed. Again, Mark and I do not actively watch Liga MX. We don't pay attention a whole lot to their transfers unless it's previewing it specifically for a Rapids or an MLS context. So I do think it is worth pointing out that Toluca's normally been a decent but not elite team in Liga MX recently. Coming off of the Leagues Cup match these teams would have played last year, in which Toluca won 4-1 to eliminate the Rapids in group play, they would have finished fourth in the Clausura, and then they were in the bottom half of the table for the Apertura of 2023, but then I think they finished third or fourth in the Clausura just this past spring. Let me double-check the Clausura one. I'm not sure about that on my notes. They did make the playoffs. They finished third in the Clausura, but then they lost in the quarterfinals in the playoffs to Chivas de Guadalajara. So I do think this is a decent Toluca team. For those concerned, Raul Bravo is not with the team. He was the guy who scored on the scissor kick for Toluca in this game last year, but they do have several really good players, and this is a Mexican team that can spend more money than the Colorado Rapids can. I've been really impressed with what I've seen from Paulinho, the striker up top. He has a goal and three assists in Liga MX play so far. And they also have a very, very good winger, Araujo. So those are the two attacking players that I would look at. Araujo is a Uruguayan winger. He normally plays on the left side in a 4-2-3-1. And then Paulinho is a Brazilian as well. For what it's worth, FOTMOB has his market value at $4.8 million. US dollars. And then there's also their two-way defensive midfielder. They have Marcel Ruiz, who is a Mexican national as well, who I would say is kind of their equivalent of Cole Bassett, if you will. So those are the three players who I'm looking at. If you just look at some of their underlying numbers as well, this is a defense that gives up some big opportunities and does rely on Thiago Volpi, their goalkeeper, in order to save chances. So from a rating standpoint, their center backs and their individual defending to prevent big opportunities isn't necessarily there. That plays in well to the Colorado Rapids, creating big chances from the opportunities that they get or the good ball situations that they are in, but maybe to also have those chances get missed or have those chances go saved by the goalkeeper, Volpi. Jonathan Lewis said something interesting. Shout out to J-Lew as well, by the way, folks. Had the goal, drew the penalty against FC Juarez, and this is coming off of a really good performance that he had to help win the Rocky Mountain Cup as well. I'm not prepared to say. I think J-Lew's back in that Jonathan Lewis has proven that he's not completely washed and that he's healthy and he's fit and he's contributing attacking-wise to this Rapids team. I still think there's some ways to go if he wanted to get certainly into the picture for the national team, but to go from being a reliable MLS veteran to something better, I think I want to see him be a little bit more consistent. And we've seen this in years past with Jonathan Lewis, where there's a period where he's injured, there's a period where he's coming off the bench and effective, he's coming off the bench and not so effective, and then he has one or two really good months, and that's where the bulk of his production is coming through. But I think if we're counting MLS League playing Leagues Cup, he has less than 500 minutes played so far this season, and he's up to, I think he's up to 4 goals and 4 assists as well. So, you know, credit to him. And if, you know, Johnny can continue to have to be on this really good run of form, and it helps the Rapids in Leagues Cup, or it helps them come the stretch run of the season, then I'm here for it. But so where was I? Lewis said something really interesting in the post-game media availability we had in the Mix Zone, where he was asked about the team's kind of fighting spirit and their ability to recover and get big results from an attacking standpoint. And he said that there were some similarities to 2021. There were some clear differences, but the key thing was that they were making big plays in big moments in both boxes. So attacking, they had big chances. They were able to finish them when it was necessary. And defensively, someone came up with a really good save or a really good block or a slide tackle like Connor Ronan did on a few occasions to ultimately prevent the opponent from getting a goal. But then he went on to say that if they give up some of those big chances against a better team like Toluca, I don't think there's any question Toluca on paper, Toluca in a Liga MX context this year is expected to be better than Club León, who I think are mid, and FC Juarez, who I think are also mid. So if they give up those chances like they did against León or against Juarez, there's a decent chance that they get beat. So I don't think there's any question that Toluca on paper is the best team that the Rapids will have played so far in this League's Cup, and they will need their best performance of this League's Cup in order to get past Toluca on Tuesday. I do not think it will be a 4-1 game. I don't think that Toluca will absolutely outplay the Rapids, score a bunch more goals, pretty much prevent them from scoring from the run of play, and then in the final 20 minutes be oleing them and absolutely smoking Moise Bombito to prevent the Rapids from advancing. But I do think Toluca will win this one. I will go with a 2-1 game. We'll see what happens. I think that's it as far as, let me do point out, we do know for sure what the matchup will be, listeners, for whoever wins this game between the Rapids and Deportivo Toluca. The winner of this game will play in the quarterfinals against the winner of St. Louis City against Club America. That game is taking place also on Tuesday. Club America is hosting St. Louis at the Diggity, and Carson California. And no matter what, because of seating, that would be a road game for the Rapids. So the Rapids are either going to St. Louis or going to America. I think we touched on this earlier. This might not have been on the pod. This might have been in written form. Four Liga MX teams this year in Leagues Cup were seeded teams that got to pick their own geographic hub. Club America is the only one of the Mexican teams that's Mexican seeded teams that is still in that. They chose Snapdragon Stadium, so their home, quote unquote, group stage games were played at Snapdragon Stadium, which is where San Diego Wave play, I believe also where San Diego FC are playing, and that's also the home of the San Diego Aztecs, Marcelo Balboa's alma mater for college football. I don't know why they're playing in Carson, California. I don't believe that there's another game going on at Snapdragon. But so in any case, the Rapids will be playing at St. Louis, or they'll be playing at Club America somewhere in Southern California, probably for the quarterfinal, no matter what. And then if we're moving on, the Rapids could host a semifinal game if they play Pumas. That side of the bracket includes that quadrant has Pumas taking on Seattle and then LAFC taking on San Jose. So if the Rapids play any of the three MLS teams in that potential semifinal after beating Toluca and then beating America or St. Louis, they would be on the road if they play one of the MLS teams. If they're playing Pumas, a non-seeded Liga MX team, that game would be back at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. And then if we want to get way ahead of ourselves, the only team in the eastern side of the bracket who the Rapids could host in a potential Leagues Cup final would be Cruz Azul or Mazatlan, two non-seeded Liga MX teams. And those two teams are playing each other in the round of 16. So the winner of that gets the winner of Cincinnati Philly. The winner of that would have to make the final for the Rapids to host the final. Any other team that the Rapids would play coming out of the East, they would be on the road. So where I kind of want to give some perspective to Leagues Cup, you know, the Portland game was what it was. That is the Rapids bogey team, possibly. That's a stadium that the Rapids don't like playing. The Rapids have won two virtual coin flip games against, I would say, decent, not elite, Liga MX opposition. And so at some point, the Rapids are going to have to get a result on the road if we're talking about advancing further in Leagues Cup. And so this goes back to the concern that Mark and I expressed on the last podcast we were on together, where this is a Rapids team that can be great at home, can dominate bad teams at home, can get results in close games against equivalent opposition. Real Salt Lake, LAFC, certainly the two Liga MX teams they beat this past week. I still need more information about what this team is capable of doing on the road against good road teams. And I think certainly if the Rapids were able to beat Toluca at home on Tuesday and then go on the road Friday, Saturday, Sunday-ish at Club America, at Snapdragon Stadium, at LAFC Stadium, at LA Galaxy Stadium, in what will surely be a Club America crowd. And if they were to get that result, that would change my calculus and how I feel about this team. So they've got a great opportunity on Tuesday to continue to grow, to show that this is a team that can punch above their weight and beat good teams. And then that would then potentially prompt a opportunity to play take down one of the Gigantes, one of the, you know, great, you know, Liga MX teams historically, possibly one of the best teams on paper on this continent right now in Club America, defending Clausura champions, I believe. And that would be an absolute feather in their cap. And that would be a statement to the LAFCs, the LA Galaxies, the Real Salt Lakes that, you know, if you're playing the Rapids on the road, this is a team that can get a result against you. So I've said it openly that I don't care for Leagues Cup personally. There's a part of me that's kind of annoyed that I'm still having to pay attention to it because I'm covering it from a Rapid standpoint. But from a narrative and a human standpoint, and from a growth of this football club this year under Chris Armas and what they're capable of doing in 2024, they have an opportunity to get a fantastic test and a fantastic opportunity to grow in a way to where even if they fail in this upcoming week, that puts them in a better position come playoff times when it matters from an MLS Cup standpoint. And so I'm really curious to see what that looks like. And regardless of what happens, Holding the High Line will be covering it for you here on this pod channel. I think that does it for everything from an on-the-field standpoint. Let's transition to off-the-field, as there's been some news on the Moise Bambito transfer front. Fabrizio Romano, Fab himself, has said he had an exclusive earlier this morning on Sunday that OGC Nice, another team in Legon, have opened up and are joining in on the interest in Moise Bumpito. Previously, there had been interest in at least two bids that we know of that had been offered by Olympique Lyonnais, Olympique Lyon, L-Y-O-N, not L-E-O-N, to be clear, that the Colorado Rapids turned down. And then there was a credible report from TSN in Canada that mostly covers transfers for Canadian national teamers that there was also an interest from RB Salzburg. So there's potentially several European clubs that are looking in for Moise Bumpito. I don't think this changes the calculus from a Rapid standpoint. I think they have a very clear idea of what that a transfer fee that they would accept right now for him. I continue to believe that that number is at least $10 million, probably or possibly $12 million U.S. dollars for him. And if a team's not coming in with an offer that matches that valuation, then they're not going to sell. They're in a position of strength. And, you know, Moise Bumpito, from everything I have seen, from everything I've heard, is not trying to force this move. He is not upset at the Rapids because he has not gotten this move yet. He is perfectly happy here. If the Rapids and another club in Europe were able to come to an agreement, that's something that he would consider. And let's be real, it would be a significant step forward in his career from a competition standpoint. It would be a huge pay bump if we're talking about him still being on a second year Generation Adidas deal. So I don't think there's any question that he would accept it, but it's not a move that he's trying to force. Where I think the calculus gets interesting, or where the Rapids have to be really careful here from a timing standpoint, is the secondary transfer window in MLS closes on the 14th, so on Wednesday of this upcoming week. In France, the transfer window doesn't close until August 30th, which is a couple weeks away, obviously, and there's plenty of other leagues in Europe that don't have their transfer window closing this week or closing until the end of September as well. So I do not see how the Rapids sell Moise Bumpito and then don't then have the time in order to make a move or do something with that money or do something to improve the team, just given that the rumor mill in terms of them bringing in another Lamine Diakhtiyal player, that is all quiet on the front range, and then also potentially bringing in a winger to supplement the injury to Kevin Cabral, that also has been fairly quiet as well. So I don't see, you know, the window closes for the Rapids on Wednesday the 14th. I don't think that the Rapids can, unless it's absolutely maxing out on the transfer valuation. So, you know, if Nice comes in and offers $15 million for Moise Bumpito on Friday, I think you accept that. But I don't see how the Rapids sell Moise Bumpito and then don't give themselves the time to also make an equivalent move in order to make that a net zero loss in terms of losing Moise and then bringing in a player who brings as much value as Moise Bumpito. And so if we're talking about potentially Moise playing on Tuesday and then even being sold on a Wednesday, that doesn't give, you know, it's 3 days from now. That doesn't give the Rapids any time to do something with that money. If they were to convert any of that transfer fee into general allocation money, they would be able to convert that to 2025 GAM. So it's not like they lose out. All the money that gets redistributed is cash. Obviously, there's all the flexibility for the Rapids to do something with that money. But I continue to think that there's no reports coming in that any of the clubs out of Europe have matched the valuation, the price tag that the Rapids have put on Bumpito. There's no indication from what I've heard or from the other reports I've seen out there that the clubs think that are willing to pay right now what the Rapids say he's worth. So they don't think he's worth right now what the Rapids are saying he is worth or will be worth in the future. Going back to the Tom Bogert description reporting from a couple of weeks ago. So I don't think Moise is sold this summer, even with the minor muscle tightness that he had on Friday that prevented him from playing in the game against Juarez. So I don't think that he will be sold. I think if there's any move that the Rapids are making before the window closes shut on Wednesday, they are making a move within the league for a veteran rental winger, a Fafa Picot, an Ethan Finley, one of those style players to supplement what they have lost in Kevin Cabral. And I think if Moise is being sold, it's going to be in the winter after he continues to ball out with the Colorado Rapids, hopefully in the playoffs, hopefully against Toluca, given how poorly he played in that game against Toluca and walked off the field immediately and was clearly crestfallen emotionally, from what I could tell. So I think the Rapids hold their cards. They don't sell Moise Bumbito. Moise Bumbito plays well for the United States, plays well for the Rapids, plays well for Canada, and then eventually this coming winter, next summer, the winter of 2025 going into 2026, then a European team will come in and say, okay, we see what you've been seeing. We think he's worth it. Here's $12 million. Here's $15 million. And the Rapids say, thank you very much. And Moise Bumbito leaves as a beloved Rapids player who then turns into a lot of money that the Rapids do hopefully some good things with. But so, you know, we'll see what happens. We will continue to report on this. And given the timing of the game this upcoming week, the game will be on Tuesday, and then Mark and I will podcast after the window has closed on Wednesday. So then by the next time Holding the High Line comes to you, we will do that with the full understanding of what happened in the MLS secondary transfer window. And I think that will, whatever moves do or do not happen there, will significantly influence and ultimately determine how the Rapids approach any further interest from Moise Bumbito in the final weeks of the European summer transfer window. That does it for me, folks. Follow us on the social medias at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHCHL. Email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and check out our written work and support us financially at our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Thank you for listening to HTHL. Mark and I will be back Wednesday night for us, so in your feed Thursday after the Rapids hopefully beat Toluca on Taco Tuesday. Peace.